welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast, and we are welcoming back this author who writes some pretty twisted books. The last book that we talked to her about was If I Disappear, and now the book that we are talking to her about is Good Rich People. So please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your book.
Hi, I am Eliza Jane Brazier. And Good Rich People, it's kind of like, you know, it's a thriller, but it's sort of like a black comedy. And it's just sort of like a take on like wealth disparity in America. Like it's sort of, I could compare it to sort of like Parasite meets like Ready or Not, like maybe a little bit of Knives Out. Like it's just this sort of completely crazy take on, you know, poverty and wealth in Los Angeles in America.
So the main character, Lila, is married to this very wealthy person. She doesn't come from wealth. Oh, and by the way, there's blood in a fountain in the beginning of the book. That's not a spoiler. That is literally how the book begins. How the blood got in the fountain, that is part of the journey. So Lila is married, you know, to this very wealthy man. You find out that her mother-in-law, Margot, lives on their property. So that's fun. And you like just the whole meeting her after the whole blood in the fountain incident, which you find out happens at a different point in time, is interesting because like she's going shopping and she's complaining that the food isn't expensive enough at the supermarket. Where did that cut? Do you know, like, is this a thing that actually happens?
I feel like it kind of is. No, I mean, honestly, so when I wrote this book, like I was living in Los Angeles. And this is kind of like even what you sort of, I guess, like hearken to in talking about the mom, like living on the property, is this kind of idea of like these like tiers of wealth. So even though they're Lila and Graham are very wealthy, like they're sort of beholden to people who are even more wealthy. So it's like their mom, the mom has like all the money. So she has this huge house that's kind of like looking down on them. They have this guest house that they invite people to live in. So there's all these sort of different levels of wealth. And then, yeah, just like, I guess, so I have, when I was living in London, I lived like below the poverty line for like 7 years. The whole time I was there, me and my husband, like he was basically on like benefits from the government. I mean, I wasn't entitled to them because I was an American, but we, you know, lived kind of very, it was a massive, like, you know, sort of struggle. We had people living with us who were homeless, who would stay with us for sometimes like years. But because my husband was a musician, he would also sometimes like, we'd get invited to these crazy parties where he would like play, you know, perform or whatever. And so we'd go to these houses where like there would be like fine art literally like collaged on the walls because there wasn't enough room on the wall for like how much art they had. Or like there was this one house that I went to and I kind of like almost referenced this in the book. And in the kitchen, every single cupboard was filled with like Moët champagne. Like the fridge, like all the cupboards, like there was no food. There was just like Moët. And it was just like this.
Yeah. I was actually, you know what? I had a note to myself. And usually I'm kind of a freewheeler when it comes to these interviews. Like I'll be like, yeah, I know what I'm going to touch on. But like one big note was, what's with the Moët? Because Moët shows up constantly in this. Fuck.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, it was like kind of like just like, I guess, like almost like a personal like joke in a way, because this like, we went to this house. It was like, it was a penthouse that was, it was somebody super famous. So I won't say who it was, but like, it was this penthouse that was like spread over two floors, like looking out over the park in England. And it was like all moa. And I remember I like walked into this house and it was like the sort of like living room was like the lobby of like a Vegas hotel. And I was like, what the, like, it's just so crazy. And we were like coming in, like we didn't have a washing machine. Like we wash our clothes in the bath. Like some of our clothes were like basically stolen or like, you know, you like find on the side of the road and you're like walking into these houses. And so like that kind of fueled a lot of it. And then I think there's also like a certain degree of like Englishness, because I did live in England for so long, like with the whole moe thing, it's like almost like how they treat like having like, let's have tea. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, let's have moe, but like everyone hates it.
You know, like, it was so funny. I mean, it might be a personal joke, but it was really effective within the context of the book. Every time it came up, it was like, oh, moe again, here we go. So Lila and her husband Graham. So Lila does not come from money, and Graham comes from Margot, which means he comes from money, and he makes a salary on his own, but Margot is just wealthy. And they have like this little apartment that they claim they rent out to help the people, but there's something more sinister in it. And you find out, you know, Lila has had history connecting with some of the tenants before, and there's just like a few different players that sort of come in and out of the book. But then there's also Demi, who is supposed to be their next tenant. But that story has its own nuances to it.
Yeah.
Man.
It's very complicated, right, to like explain, like, because it's like the way that it works is it's like a dual POV. So it goes from, it'll show like Lila's kind of perspective, and then it'll show like Demi's story. And you almost don't know, like, how are these going to connect? And then they kind of do, like, again and again in like more sort of twisted ways.
Yeah, there were just like, there were so many moments. And I really do, I mean, it's funny because I really do see it as like a black comedy, a dark comedy, a little bit even more so than a thriller. Not that the thriller aspect wasn't there. Like, I don't want to shy anybody away from this being like, okay, this is definitely a thriller, but there's humor in it that was just delicious. And you did that very well also in If I Disappear, I thought, as well. But the stories are very much quite different. How was writing this one a little bit different than the last one?
You know, to be honest, it was very like complicated, I think, in a way, how it unfolded. So initially, like I said, because of my own sort of personal experiences, like going through like extended periods of really not having money and like a very intense and like kind of, you know, you're sort of subjected to a lot of trauma. And so initially when I was writing this story, like it was hugely like therapeutic. Like when I all the sort of stuff from Demi's backstory is like a sort of fictionalized version of things that like really happened to me. Like, but it's sort of, you know, it's her father and where it was like my husband. So initially, like I'm writing this book and it was like depressing. It was not a comedy. It was very depressing. And it was like super, like it was during lockdown that I'm writing this. And it's bringing up, the thing is when you start, I don't think about that stuff a lot because it can be like very upsetting because you get kind of mad and you feel like, you know, it wasn't like certain things weren't fair or things, obviously like people like my husband has died. Some of our friends have died, things like that. So yeah, like it was just like this really like emotional and like horrible, you know, horrible kind of experience almost in a way, but I think it was good in the long run. But so the books that I was creating and like sending to my editor were like really depressing and almost like maybe like too personal, and it just wasn't really working. And so kind of, okay, funny story. Like at that time I was living in a duplex in LA, like in the Hollywood Hills, kind of similar to what is like in the book, but obviously not as fancy. And the people who were living upstairs, one of them was the director of the movie Ready or Not. And he went away to go film something else. And I'd never seen the movie. And I was like, oh, they're away. So, cause they can hear me. They could hear me through their floor. Cause I was literally underneath them. And I was like, I'm going to watch this movie now that they're gone, because he won't be able to hear me watching it. Because I was like afraid to watch it before, because I was like, what if they like hear? And so I watched that movie and I was like, oh my gosh, like that's what I need. Like that is so like simple the way that it's constructed, because it's like, you know, it's a game. It's going to like end by tonight. Or sorry, the next day. And this is what you have to accomplish. And it's like, everything was so straightforward. And so I was like, dude, that's like what I need. So I said to my editor, I think we had like a month before the book was like the final deadline. And I said, you know what? I don't really like how this is going. I want to do it this way. And I like wrote just the pitch, the idea of like these wealthy people playing a game with their tenants. And I was like, what do you think? And she was like, yeah, go for it. So I literally, like, it was this time of year last year. And I literally, like, in 5 weeks, like, rewrote the entire book. And I think because I was writing it so fast, like, I'm a very, like, even though I sound probably dark in this interview, I'm actually, like, a very, like, comedic person. Like, I probably would do better at comedy than thrillers in a way. So I was just kind of, like, writing the way that I, you know, sort of the way that I think, like, my sense of humor, like, my kind of, I don't know, like, dark observational sense of humor. And I just rewrote the whole thing super fast and had a completely different book, and it worked. And I was like, oh my gosh, thank goodness. Cause like
it did work. And there's like, you know, with the title, because I think the last time I spoke to you, I think you mentioned the title was Good Rich People, unless the title changed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe.
Possibly. Yeah. I have to go back and like be like, oh, I'm going to listen to you if I disappear again. But anyway, I digress, because I was like, oh, that is kind of a funny title. Like you could tell there's sarcasm in it. Yeah. And, you know, a little bit of interesting, just like my current reading, I'm getting ready to do an interview with the author of Beautiful Little Fools, which is another take on The Great Gatsby, which is another book about wealth. And I really liked it. But like, just when you're talking about, you know, well, there's different tiers of wealth, it was making me think of just like, you know, like these rich people who look down on these rich people. And there were things in your book that were very funny, but also really depressing. Like there's like a part where Lila's looking at Deb and she's just like, oh, she looks fabulous. She's got this weight thing going. And it's the reason she has this weight thing going is not for a good reason. And it's, again, not something I want to give away, but you know, because, one thing that was interesting was, you know, Lila's at odds with Margot because she doesn't seem to be into this game the way that Bram and Margot are. They pick Demi to be the tenant, but Demi doesn't seem to come from less so much as the others weight-wise, because I want people to kind of get into that themselves. So she's looking at her and she's just like, oh man, she's so attractive with her body being, you know, like this toothpick body. And when you're reading it from Demi's point of view, you're like, oh my gosh, no, this is not why she's so thin. This isn't like a stylistic choice.
Yeah. And it does touch on, I think, an interesting, I think, kind of point that I was sort of trying to make, is that how everyone, you know, like, so Graham is like one of the most wealthy people in the book, right? But he is like, he wants to almost like wants to be poor, you know, like he's sort of like obsessed with it, fascinated by it. Like he feels like it's like, and it's this kind of whole idea that you can't really ever sort of, I guess, have it all. And it's like, even, you know, or there's a point where I talk about how like wealthy people, like they want everything. They even want your sympathy. Like they want you to feel bad for them. They want to be struggling too. And it's like, you know, this kind of whole sort of ridiculous thing where it's like, everyone wants what the other person has, you know, even when it's not necessarily justified, I guess.
there is like this whole, and I'm not going to say that, you know, there aren't people with wealth that do set out to help people, but there's also sort of almost like, I suppose, you know, you hear about these quote unquote charity funds and charity parties, But, you know, like, is the money that's being raised really going to help the people they claim?
Yeah.
Is this an excuse to throw a party without feeling guilty about the fact that you have all this money? I mean, you know, there's a lot of talk about that, you know, like, why don't you just raise the money and get, you know, like, is the benefit really a benefit? And yeah. The idea that, you know, like, they're like, oh, we have this small place under, you know, it's like, and it's a depressing sounding apartment, by the way.
This is my real apartment. It was depressing.
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
It was the nicest place. That was the other thing, is when I was living there, and that was kind of what inspired, part of what inspired the book. It was the nicest place I had ever lived. It had a bedroom, like a one bedroom. I never had that before, but it was dark, like, because it was underneath somebody else's apartment. Or a house, like, so it's a duplex. I call it apartment. I was like, because I guess it was kind of like one, but it only had like little tiny glass windows looking out into literally trees. And it was the nicest place that I had ever lived. But so at that time I was working with someone in Hollywood who was very successful, and we couldn't meet for some reason where we were supposed to meet. So I was like, oh, come to my house. He came to my house and he was so rude. Like, he was just like, this place is dark. It's creepy. Oh. Weird, which, okay, fine, it was, but like, to me, it was just so weird, because to me, I was like, this is literally the nicest place I've ever lived, you know what I mean? And it just kind of made me realize, like, how, I guess, like what we're saying, like, how many different, like, sort of like tiers there are, and like, how people, I guess, they don't really, because of the experiences that I've had, like, I see things way different. So even like the house I live in now, I'm like, this is like insane. But like, if somebody else came here, they'd be like, all they see is like, you need to redo the kitchen. You need to, like, you know, change the carpets and like the ceiling. You know what I mean? And it's just crazy. It's just everyone's, I guess, experience dictates how they sort of view the world. But yeah, it was kind of creepy.
and you mentioned Parasite, which was great, and you know, that also has a very interesting apartment that exists in Korea. Those apartments are an actual thing. So again, that's another thing. It's like, you know, you think that something is too ridiculous or too dark or too out there to really exist, but the truth is usually sometimes just as strange as fiction.
Yeah, totally.
So, man, I loved this book so much. So some of the other things in it, Lila herself was sort of this really interesting mercurial character. There were times I felt sympathy for her, and then there were times I was like, oh no, honey, you are part of this. You want to divorce yourself from what Margot and Graham are doing, but you are buying into it. That whole aspect to her, did you see that a lot in people?
I mean, I think that what I was kind of, and I think I sort of talk about this in the book, but I think that what I was kind of trying to sort of talk about is just like complicity, because I think that, you know, this is like, in a way it can be, I mean, it's a fun and entertaining book, but I think it can also kind of be, in a way, it's a challenging book, because I think that I wanted to sort of encourage people to look at all the ways that, in which we are all sort of complicit. So I think for her, it's like she sees herself as being separate, because she says, well, I don't enjoy this game. Like, they're doing it. I don't play it. They're doing it. They're just playing it. I'm just like, you know, living here, and I'm kind of innocent because I'm not doing anything, really. She literally like barely does anything. She hates her friends, but she kind of like, yeah,
she doesn't even like, with like the cooking thing, it's like, it was so funny. Like, she's walking into the supermarket in the beginning. She's like, I can't pay for this sauce. It's not expensive enough. Yeah. And, you know, like, yeah, she doesn't do anything. She doesn't cook. She just, but like, yeah, not that she should as a woman, but really, like, I don't know. So she hires this woman who just kind of walks up to her in the supermarket and is like, oh, I can help you. I can cook, you know, just no questions asked, like, fine, you can come and you can cook for me. It was just so crazy. And yet I feel like that's totally something that would happen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in the context of the story, it sort of makes sense, just because it's like, if she doesn't get someone, then Margot will. And I think in a way that she's sort of, basically, she's been sort of trapped by this man that maybe she's in love with, maybe she's just in love with his money. She doesn't really know, but she definitely is like I had a lot of conversations with people who are interested in adapting this, like for like TV or film or whatever. And this one guy made this point that I was like actually surprised by. And he was like, oh, she just wants to be loved. I think Lila just wants to be loved. And I was like,
oh my,
I actually didn't write it. But I was like, you're kind of like, I kind of get what you're saying. Cause he was like, Margot's so, it's so weird how different people see it differently. He's like, Margot's so mean to her. Graham's so mean to her. And I think she's kind of just been really like beaten down in a way as a person, because she's like with this guy who's a complete, like, I don't know, blank, you know, like a complete, like really scary, almost predator.
Yeah. There's a lot about Graham I don't want to say, because it unfolded really nicely throughout the book.
Yeah.
And you think you're like, okay, you know, you think you know what he's all about. And then you're just like, oh. And then like a few chapters later, you're like, oh.
That's a good description. Should put that on the back.
Yeah, that's the blurb. Like, you know, again, you think you know, but oh, and then oh, and then oh.
Like,
oh, question mark.
Oh. Like that little like gif in it where she's like,
Yeah. And then, you know, there's also the incident that is described in the beginning of the book, and then it ties to Lila as well. And that's sort of another undertone that's woven really nicely into the book, involving a relationship she had with a former tenant, which I guess I can kind of see what the guy was saying through that, if that is the case. I mean, if there are any redeeming qualities Lila had at any point, it might have been shown through, possibly at one point in that, but maybe not so much.
Yeah.
The resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's like kind of an idea that that, you know, people want a human connection and nobody really has it except for Lila, like sort of maybe had it in the past. And then there's also kind of like this inkling that maybe her and Demi could have like a sort of genuine human connection, you know?
Yeah. So this book was great. This was great. So will there be an adaptation? Because I felt like,
oh, this for sure. Well, I mean, cinematic. We made, but like we had, okay. So like, I mean, you're not allowed to talk about the specifics, which is so annoying, but
specifics here.
Yeah. But it was really cool. So, cause with this book, I actually had like a major production company, which I wish I could say, reach out to me before we even took it out, which is really interesting, because it's like they get like copies, like they like sneak copies. They have like little, I don't know, little insiders or something. So they wanted to like make an offer on it. And then my agent was like, okay, well, let's take it to some other people too. And so I spoke to like a lot of people. This was over the past like couple of months. And like, I spoke to like the coolest companies. Like I literally spoke to like companies of people who I've like admired since I was like a child. So it was really cool. Like, I mean, I think we have chosen one and we're just in the final stages of negotiations and stuff, but like, that was like the coolest thing. And it was also super interesting because, I mean, I guess with this book, I would say people were more on the same page, but everyone kind of does have like a little bit of a different take. You know, like I said, that one guy really thought like really connected to Lila, which nobody ever connects to Lila.
I certainly did not connect to Lila. I will say that.
I know, it's kind of a little bit telling, right? When someone does, you're like, yeah. And just, it's just fun to talk about though. It's cool. You know, just like different like ideas. And like, I want to do it as a TV show because I think it'd be really cool to like do another season.
I think TV.
I don't want to do spoil. Yeah.
But I've really revolutionized the whole idea of adaptations. You know, like there's all this, the book was better when it comes to movies, and for the most part, I agree that, you know, but then at the same time, like sometimes movies have like something, you know, are able to portray something different. But the thing about a TV show is you get like episodes to play in the sandbox and draw it out and maybe like express nuances that were in the book, but in a different way. And I think that like, I just absolutely love this golden age of television and book, you know?
Same. That's the thing is that's like, for me, that's like the reason I want to do it is like you said, like, because TV is so great right now. And I also heard like a description, which I think is kind of also apt, is that like, you know, TV shows are about like characters. And so you get a chance to like really dive into the characters and like, it's a lot more like real life, which I think as an author is kind of like compelling, because like a film, you don't have time and everyone changes, which that rarely happens in real life. Whereas with a TV show, you got a lot of time and people don't change.
Yeah,
like you think they're gonna, but they don't. And I feel like it's kind of more like you can kind of more play with like the way that real life is, which is kind of fun to me.
Well, I'm excited. And aside from that, do you have another twisted book coming out anytime soon?
Well, I don't know how soon it is because I think they're like moving stuff around. I think they might be moving me into the summer, but I'm working on, I mean, I guess I'm allowed to talk about it, so I will, huh? This is okay. So this is like the thing, right? So I feel like If I Disappear was like a mystery. This one was like kind of like a black comedy, right? My next one is maybe like a romance, but obviously it's like a little bit twisted, but it's, so it takes place. So I used to teach horseback riding for like really sort of, I guess, like quite wealthy people in Southern California. And that's what I was doing when I sold If I Disappear. And like through that experience, like I worked with a lot of, you know, these really sort of wealthy mothers who were kind of pushing their kids into riding. And so I wanted to do like a book that was kind of based in the world, like kind of in a Megan Abbott kind of way, but obviously not Megan Abbott because I am not that good, but like sort of like a Megan Abbott meets like Leanne Moriarty. Like it's like mothers and daughters in this sort of like show jumping world in Southern California. And it's just like, it sort of like starts with like a, you know, a death at a horse show, and it kind of like goes from that. And it's like romance and, you know, drama. And it's just like, it's cool. Like it's fun. It's instead of it being like in first person, it's like third person, I guess, like omniscient. As it goes through like all the different characters, it's almost like a TV show, you know, because it'll like, and similar to this book, it's like it kind of like pivots like depending on who it's talking about. But it's super fun. Yeah, it's like a big soap opera, I guess.
Very exciting. Well, definitely come back when that comes out, and I will be thinking in my mind who should be cast as Lila and Demi and Graham and Margo, because
no. Let me know.
Yeah, no, it's like I have this whole like dream casting thing, and you know, like so sometimes when I in my mind I'm like, ooh, who could pull that off? But thank you so much for chatting with us. You are a delight as always. Hello to your horse, who is outside.
Yeah, who's wandering around right now, man. She's doing a pacing.
She's a beautiful horse. And have a wonderful day. So we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.